Hello, this is Bruce Moore. Welcome to episode 7 of the Story Weave podcast. I'm going to begin this one with not music, but the sound of waves, because we've been on vacation in the last week in California. And this is the sound of the ocean in Monterey, California, near the aquarium there. In this episode, we're going to do a combination of summarizing, keeping us on track of what this is about. But also, if you look at the picture that goes with episode 7, you'll see that we've listed here the 5 missing inner animation elements, which can be expressed in explicit mathematics and then put together into a geometry that gives a sensible alternative to space-time. Now, you may not be familiar with space-time, but I'll just recall that space-time represents a profound change in the historical view of our universe by the experts, by the physics community. It was a change from the classical view that ours is a sort of a Euclidean container of objects to the modern view, which is that our universe is a four-dimensional container of events, a radical change in viewpoint. And one understanding that is important to hang on to is that this story, as we spoke of last time, this story doesn't take off of physics and the assumptions that are made by physics. Rather, it takes off of that fantasy series that began with Flatland in the 1880s and then progressed to Sphereland in 1965. So what we've done to start this is to start with that Sphereland story and just ask a simple question: what would an atom look like to people, to these creatures that live within the membrane of a balloon? And then from that question, we align the behavior with behavior seen in our actual universe and just proceed with questions and proceed with alignments. And in the end, we end up with a geometry that displays the same behavior that is seen in physics, but with a completely different interpretation, and one that doesn't destroy the old classical idea that our universe is a container of atoms and of things made of atoms. The distinction is that in this story, each atom has a dimension of depth. We saw that last time when we talked about primal expansion. In the episode 6, we took the very simplest portion of primal expansion, which is the idea that an atom has a spinal body, that an atom in this fictitious universe that we're creating that will be a geometry, an atom has a spinal body that is connected to all other atoms in the center, and expands at the speed of light. And in doing so, we align with measurements in our universe of the separation of the stars. So, and I'll recall again that that's not unique to this story. Other people such as Marco Pereira have shown that idea that expansion of a sphere or a hypersphere at the speed of light gives the same kind of separation that we see in the separation of the stars. So last time we started with that simple idea of expansion in that way, and we found alignment. And we also found that we could get somewhere by saying, what does an atom look like on the surface? And in fact, we make a big step there in primal expansion, because the idea of an actual spherical surface goes away. And we just have the universe is a collection or a set of these atoms that are, you know, like that. They're all connected in the center, and they grow from the center at the speed of light. And to avoid some confusion, just remember that, of course, we have no actual light in this toy universe, in this mathematics, but we calibrate it to light. So we imagine expanding the radius of this atom. Every crank corresponds to a second, and we imagine the expansion per crank to match the speed of light, and that's the way we deal with it. So The counterpart to light in this story is, in fact, expansion. So we'll look at it that way, and we get just astonishing alignments. Now, what I will do in this episode is to take each one of these five elements and just say a few words about them. We'll have other episodes that are devoted in a concentrated way to these elements. But right now, just a few words, and I'll separate each one of these explanations by a wave from California, from the ocean, Pacific Ocean in California. So to start with, I'll name the five things. We have primal expansion. We've spoken just a little bit about it. I'll say some more words about it in this episode. Angular location. Primal energy. This is a story of inner energy, a flow of energy that is associated with expansion. Or I should say maybe induced by expansion in this story. Pythagorean allocation, which is about a different way of looking at the Pythagorean theorem. And what we're wanting to do is allocate energy in this case. And then the Pythagorean butterfly, that is a specialization of the Pythagorean allocation that works for the kind of energy we'll see in this primal expansion. Further in this episode, we'll take each one of those elements and say something about them to give context, to give you a feel of how they work in the story without going into very much detail at all. But first, I wanted to make one observation, which sometimes I fail to make. And that is that in this arrangement with these five elements and building up the mathematics of these elements, we will actually be able to see space-time mathematics in this framework. And we will be able to see the alternative mathematics in this framework. And therefore, we'll be able to compare the two. And the very powerful aspect of that is we will be comparing space-time mathematics in this context to the alternative mathematics in this context. So in doing so, we can clearly see a flaw in the space-time framework as it applies to this context. Now, some people may say, well, that flaw might not be in space-time applied to the physics context. That may be true, but I don't think so. But that's kind of beside the point, because within this framework, it's a direct comparison. You can see the space-time framework, and you can see the alternative framework, which is called relation space, by the way. And you can see that there's just a clear flaw in the space-time approach. So now let's take each one of these elements and say a few words about them in this episode without going into great detail, but just kind of help give an overall view of the nature of this work. Primal expansion. It is really much more than just a spinal body increasing in radius at the speed of light. Actually, energy or material comes into the spinal body, and half of it flows out to create tangential web elements. So each atom, and there's a reference in the description of this episode to a video that demonstrates simple primal expansion of a portion of a web. The simplest portion of a web is just a circular segment or a segment of a circle. And in this case, a 2-radian segment of a circle. But much more than that, an atom generates, as it expands, it generates a 2-radian web portion in every sensory direction. So for the case of Sphereland, which is what we are demonstrating this in, there are two tangential dimensions, a surface like that would be the surface of the balloon, but the balloon isn't really there. What's there is a web that puts out tangential elements in every direction, and that every two-dimensional direction. At every point along the spinal body, there are web elements. It's extending out in all sensory directions. So primal expansion, there's a lot to it, but that's what we're going to say about it right now. It grows an internal web. And the really amazing thing is that if you look at the scale of our universe, an atom would have expanded at the speed of light for the age of our universe. So that's 13.5 billion years. So the distance of the radius would be 13.5, roughly, billion light years. And the web portion of each atom is that far in the tangential direction. So for a creature on Sphereland, he would be looking in a kind of circular way out at stars in Sphereland, and 2 radians away, 1 radian in each tangential direction. So that's 13.5 billion light years away. Now, that's hard to conceive of, but that's what this math says. And you know, the observations are really astounding in actual physics, and this is just as astounding as that. So that's where one of the lovely sayings, I love this saying, that you could say to children, according to this line of thought, every atom, and therefore we, every person, is as deep as the stars are far away, because the depth is that inner dimension that is that atom's spinal body that goes all the way to the center and joins with all other atoms. Angular location. Now again, it's very beneficial to think about that expanding balloon, the membrane of a balloon, and to remember that an atom looks like a circular disk on that membrane. And any two atoms with stationary axes on the surface will always be moving away from each other. So when you're dealing with just the surface, you can't make sense of anything being still. Everything is moving relative to everything else. And so you can't make any sense of something being at rest. You can't make sense of any absolute location. But you can see here that, well, if you consider the axis that goes through that circular disk and all the way to the center, that spinal body's axis, that is a valid location. And it can be stationary. Its motion is rotation. So angular location is extremely important. It gives us what physics doesn't have, and that is the ability to talk about at-rest conditions, the ability to talk about absolute location, and the ability to talk about two atoms that are stationary because their axes are not moving. So even though the surface locations may be moving away from each other, the locations of the atoms can be stationary. And that is a very powerful mental leap, an imagination leap, that's totally valid in this context. And actually, it's totally valid one step up for our angular location is valid for a universe like ours. That's not completely evident, but that's one of the things that is shown in the more detailed explanation, that is it's entirely possible in our universe to speak of angular location of objects and to have that advantage to where there can be the notion of stationary. And again, I'll point out that there is a reference in this, in the description of this episode, that to a video that will demonstrate simple primal expansion. And there you'll see this idea of angular location, although it isn't spoken of too much, but you'll see the visual that will bring this home to you. Primal energy is best understood by looking at an expanding circle. In this work, and you can see this idea also if you look at that video that's referenced in the description of this episode, you can see that an expanding circle, the atom expands at the surface level, the atom expands a 2 radian portion of a circle. But in the full story, it expands a web that fills a 2 radian portion of the circular disk, not just the circle that's on the circumference. And so the energy-like substance that's flowing in from expansion feeds the expanding tangential portion of the web all up and down the spine. And in the case of a sphere, it's like a cone. It fills in a conical volume. Since we're dealing with material in this imagination, we can take a simple geometry like a circle and with an axis, and we can spin that and create a conical portion of a sphere. So that's kind of like detailed stuff. But the point is that the substance that's brought in, every time you crank the spinal body, substance comes into that straw-like body. And an amount equal to half of that inlet substance is diverted tangentially to feed that expanding web in every tangential direction and all up and down the spinal body. So what happens in this work is you can quantify that. You can make an assumption, well, let's talk about that straw. It's like a circular opening. It's got a certain distance that it expands every time the crank is turned in that expansion process. And it's taking substance in. That substance has a density. And you can look and see what has to happen for that to fill in the void that is made from expansion, fill in the web portions. And if you do all that, you get a primal energy expression that looks just like E equals MC squared. There's a big difference, though, because for one thing, in this expression, that represents a flow. That's not true of E equals MC squared in physics. In physics, it represents a potential for doing work, where here it represents an inner flow of primal substance induced by expansion. A very interesting consequence is that the term M in there, which would be mass in physics, E equals MC squared, the term M is a density. And as you go through this story, you'll see that that makes all the difference in the world as far as understanding what is going on. The term that is normally thought of as a mass is actually, in this case, a substance density. Anyway, you get a really explicit expression of primal energy, and that's an inner energy that flows into the atom, and that's calibrated to light. Of course, as you would expect, the story gets a little more complicated, because that energy, that primal energy, is used for more than just feeding that expanding web. Portions of that energy are used to support other functions, such as in the case of constant velocity, a portion is used to support velocity. Just as you have E equals MC squared, in physics you have kinetic energy, which is MV squared, velocity squared. And it's the same story. That represents a portion of energy in this mathematics, a portion of energy that supports velocity. And there are other functions too in this that aren't in physics. So it's some interesting thing. One of them is compression. We will not talk about compression very much, but to give you an idea, suppose you have a force that's pressing on a body. In physics, we know that that will accelerate it to a velocity if the force stops, and it will continue at constant velocity unless there's some other forces. Well, if you have two opposing forces on an object, then there's no change in velocity, but there is energy being used in this scenario, and that energy is energy of compression. Compression is discussed in the toy physics book, but for now, in this work, we'll just talk about supporting velocity in an equilibrium condition, constant velocity. So a portion is taken out, so E equals MC squared is divided into two portions. One supports velocity, and the remainder supports feeding that relational web out in every tangential direction. So now that we've mentioned allocation, energy allocation, we can talk about the two Pythagorean structures here. Pythagorean allocation represents just the simple application of the Pythagorean theorem, which we know comes from way back before Christ, Pythagoras' work. with a right triangle, a 90-degree triangle, the hypotenuse c squared is equal to the sum of the squares of the other two sides. So a squared plus b squared is equal to c squared, taught in every high school. But here, what we're doing is we're looking at it a little differently. Rather than just thinking of c squared, we're thinking of mc squared. So that's not just a square, but it's a square of substance. And so what we're saying is that mc squared, in this case, represents a flow of substance, and we're going to take a portion of it, which is mv squared, to support velocity. So we have that triangular relation there. Mc squared, the total, is equal to mv squared plus whatever is the remainder, ms squared. So we're using the Pythagorean theorem in a different way, in that we're not really thinking so much about the distances of the triangular legs. We're thinking more about those squares as a resource. And so the difference between the two structures, Pythagorean allocation represents just a simple resource allocation. And there's a video, also a YouTube video referred to in this description of this episode, that illustrates Pythagorean allocation. The Pythagorean butterfly is a specialized version that works for this application, for the expanding web being filled and having the sort of two portions. There's the radial spinal body, there's substance in that, and there's substance that goes out tangentially. The Pythagorean butterfly has that nature. Half of the substance is radial and half of the substance is tangential. And in the same way as a simple Pythagorean allocation, these structures can be partitioned into smaller objects with the same characteristic. So in this work, the mc squared, the energy, actually has that structure. It's half tangential and half radial, but it can be partitioned into smaller components where each has that same characteristic, in that half is radial and half is tangential. So the Pythagorean butterfly can be partitioned in the same way as the simple Pythagorean allocation structure, but it is suited to this inner energy application, which supports an inner growing web. So finally, having described each one of these elements here, I can roughly explain how relativity works in this geometry. And it works in the following way, that if an atom is stationary, meaning that the spinal body is not rotating, then all of the energy goes into the expanding relational web. And the relational web sends out tangential elements in every sensory direction. But if there's velocity, then a portion of the energy, that's mv squared, is required to propel rotation of the atom's spinal body. And that leaves the remaining energy to nourish expansion of the tangential web. I apologize here, my voice is just collapsing, but I want to go ahead and get through this. Is that it's difficult to describe this part without some illustrations, but because the tangential web has less energy to grow, then it has to contract down the spinal axis. And that is exactly the same type of contraction that is in special relativity. So the bottom line story is that relativity is actually, if you think of it, relativity, it's about collective behavior. The web supports that. And collective behavior even includes distances. If you'll recall that angular location can be constant, and yet the distance between two locations will change depending on the radius. So when the web nourishment contracts along the spinal body, then the distances that are sensed by senses or sensing instruments, those contract in the same way as that you see in special relativity, Lorentz contraction. So here the story is sensible, and that is energy is actually a commodity that's flowing because of expansion, and it powers everything. It powers relational behavior, collective behavior with other atoms. It also powers motion of the atom through rotation. And when it does, that energy is required for rotation. Less is available for relational behavior. And so the distances contract, and also the rhythmic behavior slows down. Having briefly described these five elements, we can say something about the mapping situation. What's wrong with the classical mapping situation? So after already going through some tedious explanations, I don't want to go through another one. But let's just imagine that two atoms are, you take a snapshot, and one of them is at rest, so its axis is not moving. And the other one is rotating, so its axis is moving, it's rotating. But you've taken a snapshot. Now, what happens is that because the two atoms have different energy equilibriums, one of them will have a shorter active region of its spinal body that's nourishing web growth. And so the distance from that one of the atoms senses to the other will not be the same as the distance in the other direction. And so that just simply doesn't work. Surface direction and distance, linear distance doesn't work. So the shift here is recognizing that angular distance does not change. It will be the same from both sides, regardless of the fact that one of them is stationary and the other one is moving, or no matter what their motion is. If it's uniform motion, the angular distance sensed from each side will be the same. And that's the essential difference. And what modern physics does instead is it goes to a four-dimensional direction and distance scheme, where now you're not talking about direction distance between two atoms. You're talking about between two events, which becomes bizarrely confusing. So this one, this alternative scheme, after you get to know it, is very clearly understandable. So I know this episode has been intense, but I hope it gives you a sort of a general overview of what's going on with this story, these five missing elements. And we'll allocate different episodes to each one of these elements, actually multiple episodes probably for some of them, where we'll go into more detail. And there'll be supplementary materials available for you to go deeper. And also there will be an offering of courses also if you want to go even deeper than that. So thank you for listening. Please reach out to me on Instagram, where my identifier is Bruce C. Moore, or on Clubhouse, it's at BC Moore. Reach out to me there if you'd like to discuss this or know more about it. I'll be happy to entertain whatever questions you have. Thank you.